Hello, and welcome to the IJ Notes podcast, where we take you behind the scenes to explore the work of journalists around the world. I'm Devin with the IJ Net team. On June 24th, 2022, the U.S. Supreme Court repealed the constitutional right to an abortion in Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization, overturning nearly 50 years of legal precedent and severely restricting the capacity for people to have an abortion across 14 states today. In the months since, the Dobbs decision has resulted in a flurry of laws and judicial decisions to further restrict abortion access. For example, in early April, a federal judge ordered restrictions on mifepristone, a pill commonly, but not exclusively, used for abortions across the country. The decision was later stayed by the Supreme Court, as the case now makes its way through the U.S. judicial system. Reproductive health access isn't just a U.S. issue. From recent legalization of abortion in Argentina and Ireland to new anti-abortion laws passed in the last few years in Poland, it's a top-of-mind issue around the world. To kick off our new series on reproductive health reporting, I spoke to Maya Miller, the reproductive health reporter for the Gulf States Newsroom, a regional collaboration between NPR and local public radio stations in Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana. We spoke about the role local journalism plays in raising awareness about abortion restrictions, what journalists should consider to ethically report on the topic, and what stories to follow in local communities. As a note, this podcast was recorded before the recent mifepristone abortion pill ruling in the U.S. The court case was ongoing, but not yet decided at the time we spoke. Maya Miller, thank you for joining us today. I'm going to start with the first question, which is, what brought you into the field and what brought you into reproductive reporting or reporting on reproductive rights? How have you seen that evolve over the past year?
So I started in journalism at a local alt-weekly reporting on juvenile justice and criminal justice in Jackson. And I took some time off from journalism because I thought that I was going to go into medical school. I've always loved women's health, women's rights. As a cis woman myself and a Black woman in Mississippi, I've always really loved, you know, women who look like me, who fought for rights that I have these days. You know, growing up with my grandmother, hearing about how, you know, she couldn't have a credit card and, you know, my granddad had all the money, you know, so hearing about how women's quality has sort of evolved over the last 50, 60 years. I really wanted to combine how much I enjoy reading and writing about reproductive rights with also my love of storytelling. I love going into communities, and there's this really funny meme that one of my friends sent me when I got the job, and it was like journalists walk into a place with a clipboard and be like, hey, what the hell's going on around here? Like, that's me. I'm like, someone tell me what's up. Like, what's going on? I've always had questions about everything. And so when the Dobbs decision leaked, I had kind of already been thinking about going back into journalism. And then the decision leaked, and I was like, okay, what sorts of stories are going to be happening? What is the fallout that we are going to see? What sorts of stories are we going to hear and see if abortion rights are overturned? And then when they were overturned, it was almost like, okay, I'm here. I'm in Mississippi. I, you know, basically ground zero. I'm here. And I just applied for the job. And even in the interviewing process, I was like, you know, I really didn't know. I don't know what's going to happen in the next year, the next 5 years, the next 10 years, but I'm here. And people who look like me and people who I walk alongside every day are going to suffer the most. And so why not take care with those stories and actually get them out into the world?
After the leak of the Dobbs decision, and especially after the actual decision was made by the Supreme Court, we've seen kind of a renewed interest or expansion of reporting on reproductive rights in the United States. As a local journalist, as a journalist who's reporting specifically on Mississippi and the surrounding area, what has local journalism looked like, especially in reporting on reproductive rights over the past year? What have been some of the stories? What have been some of the aspects that maybe local journalism has caught, but the national newspaper might not have?
I think locally, we have a lot of really awesome reporters who are trying to cover the state and, you know, in my case, the region as best we can, and collaborating with other journalists who are also covering the sort of intersections of reproductive health and all other ways that, you know, access is impacted. I think some of the stories that we're seeing, like I said, are the ways that reproductive health has sort of intersected with all other avenues of life. So in Mississippi, we're facing a lot of hospital closures in very underpopulated kind of maternity deserty areas, which is why they're called maternity deserts, maternity care deserts. And, you know, I feel that locally, reporters who live in the communities that they're writing about understand how not having clean water can impact, you know, how you feed your child, or schools being underfunded impacting where your kid goes to school. A hospital closing means that you have to drive 3 hours now to give birth to a baby that you may not have planned for. We also have a lot of people who live in poverty. And so when, you know, when abortion was banned here, many residents cannot afford hundreds of dollars to travel out of state. I think reporters who live on the ground here understand that a little bit better than reporters who maybe live somewhere else and then come in.
What do you see as the role of local journalism in informing your communities about what's happening? Obviously, abortion has been banned in very different ways across many different states. Some permit it in cases of rape and incest, others do not. And we're currently seeing an example where abortion pills are being banned. How do you help your communities in your state navigate through those issues as they arise?
I think local journalism contextualizes a little bit better what actually is happening, because some people, they're like, oh, abortion is banned or abortion is illegal, but then they don't understand that if they have a miscarriage and they need a DNC, that counts as an abortion procedure. And you know, you still can order abortion pills, but there are workarounds. They're not perfect, but you can order them and get them mailed to you from out of state or out of country. And those are things that local journalists can say, hey, did you know that there's a group in Mississippi Reproductive Freedom Fund that are raising funds to send pregnant people out of state for abortion care, people who don't want to be pregnant? Local journalism, like I said, it adds context to the reality of what's happening, because some people see it as, hey, it's just abortion, without, you know, really understanding that if they can come for abortion, they can come for abortion pills. Once they get abortion pills, you know, they're already coming after gender affirming care for our trans brothers and sisters. It's like stepping stones, and journalists can see it, but we have to put it in a way that someone who's listening to the news at 8:04 on their drive to work can understand in 5 minutes or less, because they didn't go to law school. I mean, I didn't go to law school, but they didn't go to law school. Local reporters know who our people are. We know who our people are. And knowing our people, you know, that helps us, that informs the way that we frame a story.
For local journalists who are considering reporting on this, or who have been reporting on this, what tips or resources or common mistakes even that journalists can make, do you think that they should start to think about?
One tip that I have is listening to the people who've been doing this work for longer than I have. And that's not just in journalism, that's in when I'm sourcing. If someone's been in abortion access, you know, fighter for 20 years, 25 years, that's almost as long as I've been born. So when they say, we've been seeing this, or we knew about this, or they're not done, like, listen to those voices. And I would say that one of the mistakes that, I wouldn't say that it was a mistake, but I think when I started in this position, I assumed that it was going to be a chaotic sort of like flood of stories of women and pregnant people who are, you know, they're either can't get an abortion, or they can't, you know, they're coming for birth control next, so now I can't even get my birth control. I think we are very quick to jump in and tackle a story, but I think we need to take a little bit of time to sit and think and read and, you know, go physically into these spaces, have conversations with people, like go sit, have conversations with, you know, potential sources, but not for a story, for a deeper understanding of what you're reporting on, the history, the landscape, the, you know, so that's a tip.
Is there one story that you've written about over the past couple of months that you feel really exemplifies both the unique stories that local journalism can tell, but, or in another way, a story that might be overlooked or underreported in the national news?
So I've done a couple of stories that aren't directly about abortion access, but they do tie into reproductive health. And one was about how pregnancy resource centers are sort of emerging as, like, even though most people understand the role of pregnancy resource centers is to steer pregnant people away from abortion. Some of them have a religious bent, most of them do. But if you are a pregnant person who lives in a maternity care desert and you need a pack of diapers and a can of formula, where are you going to go? So I spent some time in a pregnancy resource center, just kind of like hanging out, seeing how they work, seeing the baby boutique with the clothes and things. And they are stocked with supplies to help sort of raise a child, but they are not a hospital. They do not give out medications. They do not give out, you know, vaccines for babies. If your child has asthma, what if you have postpartum depression? Those are not things that can be solved by a pregnancy resource center, but they are, you know, they're getting a lot of money from donations and the government. We have tax credits now in Mississippi for pregnancy centers. If a corporation donates X amount of dollars to a pregnancy center, they can get a match for dollar match for the tax credits. Why are we putting up to $10 million into pregnancy centers when there's another hospital on the coast closing their labor and delivery unit? Which is also another story that I did about how when hospitals are closing their labor and delivery units, if someone goes into labor at home in a car, in an emergency, there's a program at UMC that's training paramedics to care for moms and babies who are delivering on the side of the road. Or if they can get to the nearest emergency room, can you stabilize them to get them in a car to go to Memphis or Jackson or, you know, Birmingham or anything like that? So there are ways that not having abortion access, it's starting to show up just a little bit in different avenues. More babies are going to be born in places without hospitals. So what are we doing about that? more places are going to be born where people don't have money. What options are there? And they're not perfect. They're not great. I think everyone is focused a lot on abortion, people who are, women who are just these terrible stories of needing an abortion, can't get one. But and that is important, and that's kind of what I'm getting at over this summer. But also for the people who are here, what are their options too?
This is a issue that's profoundly personal to a lot of people, but it's also a very politically charged issue. What is it like as a reporter to have to navigate the politics of this, while trying to cover the story?
It's been infuriating in ways that I did not expect. Like I said, the pregnancy resource center tax credits, but we didn't get postpartum Medicaid until like a week ago. Extended postpartum Medicaid until about a week ago. I am someone who is lucky enough to not have ever needed an abortion procedure, but I know someone who has. It's difficult to turn that objective journalism side of me off when I go home. People who have an understanding of what reproductive health means, it's not just abortions, but abortion is the thing that is very divisive, especially in Mississippi. It's important when covering a beat such as reproductive health to give everyone involved in the conversation a fair chance to say where they stand on this thing, this issue. But if your stance is harmful to a community, then I have to hold you accountable in my sourcing, my fact checking, my. I can't just offer one side of the conversation as the fact. I can't just say, yeah, such and such does this thing. You have to supplement that with the reality. That's what that like you can't just let a conversation end at what someone says. Because if John says, I don't know, if Jim says, apples are blue and da 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 da, it's my job to go search for these damn blue apples. We need to keep an eye out on the abortion pill lawsuit by Jim BioPro, as well as Walgreens not issuing abortion pills. I know that I'll be spending a bulk of the summer looking at sort of like a year of Roe. So looking at the ways that has the healthcare system been impacted. Not from the abortion standpoint, but from like the are we having do we see more infants? Do we see more children in foster care or more parents who are on, a supplemental sort of income or like Medicaid coverage, things like that. I think we also need to look at gender affirming care. That's a big one. But that's more in a trans rights issues. We need to really look at how there are two ways. Well, there are multiple ways, but I think there are two ways that this could go. Either we're going to start seeing more children being born in a state that is not ready for them, or we're going to see more people leaving states because they don't feel protected here anymore.
What is the future of this that you see? What are some stories coming up in, let's say, the next year that you are keeping an eye on and that you think that other journalists, especially journalists in a local setting, should be keeping an eye on?
We don't really know what's coming next. Because like I said, when the decision leaked, there was a sort of fear that we were going to hear horror stories every single day. And while there are stories, you know, there's Nancy Davis out of Louisiana. There's the woman out of Texas. I don't remember her name, but I think there it's going to take a little bit of time for it to impact us in our personal, like in our like day to day. Because like I said, you know, we like to say everyone knows someone who's had an abortion. Everyone loves someone who's had an abortion, even if you don't know it. I think if we give it enough time, and this is terrible, but I think everyone is going to know someone who needed an abortion and couldn't get one. If we give it time, I think it's going to get there. And that's scary. But that's, you know, that's the world we live in right now. So yeah. One thing that I would do, if I were someone who wanted to start like break out into journalism, one, I would think about what is it that I'm passionate about? So whether it be, you know, reproductive health, reproductive rights, environmental justice, poverty. Think about what you would want your beat to be. And I like to frame them as like my weekly guiding questions. You know, if I were a baby born in 2023, where would I go for, like, where would my mom take me for my shots or whatever? Oh, there's no hospital. Okay, what is that like? So definitely start like asking some guiding questions. Like if you were in environmental justice, it'd be like, oh, well, what does Ohio mean for, what does that mean for people who live near the water? And then what is the history of that sort of disaster happening in America or wherever you're located? And then honestly, so definitely find like your local papers or your local stations, and reading what they produce. I listen to, I have NPR playing in the morning. I have like an alarm clock that plays like all of my favorite podcasts and things like that in the morning. And I listen to that in the morning. I do it almost every day. Stay curious about the community around you. And again, like constantly, like write your questions down. You don't have to answer them today, but like write them down.
My final question is also kind of a forward-looking one, which is, let's say that you are a young journalist interested in reporting on their local community. They're excited about it. They want to report on this. They don't know where to start. Where would you start as that journalist? Maybe they're in a freelance capacity. Maybe they found a beat like yours at a local paper or a local radio station. Where would you start? What questions would you start asking?
Be curious about who your lawmakers are. Be curious about who authored these bills. Be curious about if anyone's introduced any alternative solution. If you're proposing an anti-abortion bill, then are you proposing that we raise, you know, the amount of coverage that we have for the amount of money that we put into kids in schools or kids in hospitals. There was a formula shortage. Are we making means to, I don't know, have a formula bank for babies? Be curious about who the people are that saw this coming and how they feel now. But honestly, just stay informed about who the people are who are in the room making these decisions and why. What benefit is it for them to make, to write laws that don't affect them? They don't affect them, but they are so passionate about a pro-life environment or just protecting children, but not paving any sort of groundwork to support those children. So yeah, just stay curious about the people, about the mom in the Delta that works at, the dollar store during the day and a gas station at night. Stay curious about your representative who is never at the Capitol, but always tweeting. I don't know. Just stay curious about people, the little people, the little workings of all of these systems.
Thank you for listening to IJ Notes. Once again, I'm Devin with the IJNet team. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn to be the first to hear about our next podcast when it is released.